From WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, you're listening to Who Lies Beneath the Asylum. I'm Sherry Russo. This is a podcast about restoring dignity and respect by giving a voice to the voiceless. The old Athens Lunatic Asylum mystifies almost everyone who comes to Athens, Ohio, from college students and professors at nearby Ohio University to those visiting the rolling hills of Appalachian Ohio. The regal buildings sit on top of a hill overlooking town. Originally, the sprawling grounds were a park-like setting with gorgeous ponds, gardens, and fountains. The beauty in stark contrast to the history of what happened to some of those who were taken to the now-closed facility. On the asylum grounds, there are three cemeteries where approximately 1,900 patients who weren't claimed by their families when they died were buried. They look like what you would expect. Two even resemble Arlington National Cemetery, with white rectangular grave markers in straight rows lining the landscape. But when you take a closer look, there's something different, something missing. Many of the tombstones are only marked with numbers. There are no names or dates. Doug McCabe is a retired library archivist and spent many years digging through old documents linking names and life stories with the numbers on the grave markers. On this podcast each week, Doug and I are going to use his research and talented voice actors to give a voice to those who didn't have one in life or in death. Doug McCabe is now joining us. Doug, what attracted you to help find the names and stories of those who were buried there?
Shortly after I started working at Ohio University's Archives and Special Collections, I became aware that there was a collection of materials that came from the asylum itself. And that sparked my interest to start with, but it was also a case where we had a number of students in particular, but other people as well, who would pop in and ask about records that we had or things that we had in the archives. I found that there was a lot of speculative stuff, a lot of things that were based very loosely on actual events, but really stretched things from there. And so I got to thinking, well, let's look into some of this. And because we had the asylum records in the archives, I thought, well, perhaps what might be interesting is to go through those records as well as other records I could find in other places and just make a list, an inventory of references to the asylum, so that people could see that there are records and materials that could prove to be more interesting than just grabbing your interest in spooky things.
Interesting. So obviously that research then took on a life of its own. What was that catalyst that took it to the next level?
One Saturday, I was working in the archives. We would be open from, say, noon to 4 on Saturdays, and a couple, a husband and wife, and actually their two children as well, popped in, and it was kind of ironic because in the sort of lobby area of the archives, there are display cases there, and I had mounted an exhibit on the asylum itself, and so these people were, really scrutinizing that exhibit, and then they came in and said, "Are you Doug McCabe?" And yeah, and well, we were directed to come and talk to you about a project that we're interested in doing. Fine. So we sat down and started talking, and they revealed that they were interested in putting flat markers in the cemeteries, not taking out the headstones or anything, the numbered headstones, but putting in flat markers at those grave sites that had just numbers on the gravestones, and with these flat markers would have the names and birth dates, death dates of those patients buried under the numbers. And they felt that I could help them out.
Hmm.
And that, yes, was the case, because we had a photocopy of the asylum grave log book or registry that began in 1880 when they first opened the cemetery and ran up through, I think it was 1945. Now, it was 1943 when the asylum finally began to put names and dates on the headstones. So we at least then had a record of the names of the people and their burial dates for to cover all of those grave markers that were just numbers. Now, the next challenge, of course, would be what are the birth dates? And so that was going to require some research. So this couple, they were really only interested in the names and the dates. And I can see why, because, I mean, that's what they wanted to put on the grave markers.
Right, yeah.
But to me, it was became more than that. It was these people, by being buried under numbers, to me, that struck me as a loss, if you will, of dignity and respect for being human beings. And so I thought, well, there really needs to be more done about that. And so I started really digging into things and creating a database that would include a whole lot more information than just names and dates.
Wow. So what was the reason that these people were buried under numbers rather than names? Do we know that?
I could never find any documentary evidence as to why that was. What I do know is that the Athens Asylum was certainly not the only place where grave markers were used with just numbers. This is also the case at pretty much all of the asylums in Ohio. And it appears that this is the case, too, in a lot of asylums throughout the United States. It's also the case that this kind of process was done at prison cemeteries, county home or poor houses, and so forth. And it just seems logical to me that when you consider that these are state-run facilities, that it's a whole lot easier and cheaper to buy a stack of gravestones with numbers than it is to etch into these stones names and dates. So I think what happened there was the decision was we'll put in these markers with just numbers. And we do have a log book, a registry, so we do actually know who's buried where,
right,
if anybody really wants to know. Now, the thing that adds to the complication is they duplicated numbers. So there are two number ones. There are not two number ones, but there's, say, two 218s and two 347s. And one represents a man and one represents a woman. And then I quickly discovered going into this, the cemeteries, that you might have a row of women and then a row of men and then a row of women and then two rows of men and so forth. And then at the end of the row, you would see this real jump in numbers and that would turn out to be either men or women in the other gender's row. And it was really crazy. So I decided to add to my creating of sort of databases, and I mapped all three cemeteries so that we would not again run into a problem that had happened at least once where an additional grave marker was put in at the wrong grave.
Wow. Yeah, that's a problem, that's for sure. Now, obviously not everyone who was housed at the asylum was buried on the grounds. Their family would claim them or take them off for some way. But these people were unclaimed by their families. Am I right about that?
Yes. And again, there's kind of no documentation for this, but I guess, just thinking about it, these are people who, yes, are unclaimed by families. So what would be maybe a reason for that? Well, it could certainly be embarrassment on the part of the family but it could also be that the family couldn't afford to have the body prepared and shipped home to the local cemetery. It could also be that the administration of the asylum could not find any surviving family members. And then there, too, it could be that the administration didn't try very hard to find family members. And then finally, that there were actually no family members to be found anyway.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, to you and me, that sounds horrific, right? But it was a different time back then, right? It was a different time.
Well, yeah. But so a lot more people died at the asylum than are buried there. So most those people were sent to a local Athens funeral home and prepared, and then the casket was shipped home to where the family could have that person interred in a local cemetery. Now, the thing there is, by them being placed at a local cemetery, they're getting a headstone, and it has their name, and it has their dates, and it might have a little message. But what it doesn't say is that this person was insane. You know for sure that they were considered insane if they're buried in the Athens Asylum Cemetery. And then to make matters even worse, I guess, in a way, they're under a number and not a name and dates. So it just removes that more, like I said earlier, the dignity and respect that they deserve as human beings.
Well, another thing that goes to the dignity and respect is they weren't buried. They were only buried 4 feet deep, right?
That's the story, that they're buried only 4 feet deep and that they're shrouded and not put into caskets.
Oh, wow.
And that also means that they may not have been embalmed. So that I can't, and until you would go and dig into some of the graves, you can't really confirm some of that material. I have not seen any documentation on how burials were prepared and so forth. So that's sort of another part of folklore.
Right. Wow. Well, so, just for those who don't know who are listening, the reason that you and I, well, you, I know why you, but why I know a little bit more about this project is because in 2013, you helped me produce a documentary for WOUB television on those buried at the asylums without the named grave markers called The 1900 Voices from the Athens Asylum. And we learned that the life stories of several of those who were buried there, and with the help of voice actors, we allowed them to tell their own story. Now, each week on this podcast, we're going to kind of follow that same model, giving a voice to the voiceless by allowing those buried there to tell their own story, so to speak. So one of the reasons I got involved in this project, I learned about it. You talked about your catalyst moment with the couple coming to the library. Mine was, I was working in the WOUB newsroom at the time, and I had just had my son. And I had really, really struggled for months with postpartum depression. I am a generally happy-go-lucky person who smiles all the time and doesn't really, isn't really a person that is affected by sadness. I plug through whatever I'm going through. But this, I just couldn't do it. And so it was really difficult for me. And I stumbled across this article, I believe it was in one of the Athens papers, about a woman who was buried up on the asylum named Viola Rapp. And her story was that they believed she had postpartum depression, and that's why she was taken to the asylum. And, you know, then you dig into that story a little more, and her daughter was very young when she was taken to the asylum and never really knew the full story of what happened to her mom. And her mom died there of tuberculosis, if I'm thinking of all of that correctly. So for me, I was like, oh my gosh, like if this had been, you know, if I had been me in the early 1900s, this could have happened to me. And so I just felt compelled to tell this story. And I connected with you and learned about all the other stories. So it really shook me to my core. And I'm sure Viola's story impacted you as well, Doug.
Well, very much so. Her story and hundreds of others, of course. I mean, this is the kind of thing for every patient placed in the asylum, they have their own unique story and their own unique mental distress, or not.
Right.
In a couple of some cases.
Right.
There were other reasons for putting them in the asylum. And there's such a mystique about asylums anyway, and as well as, of course, the mystique about mental illness, mental distress. And a lot of people think this is all spooky, woogie-boogie stuff. And yeah, there's been a lot of that placed on things like that. You know, you get this, oh, the whole asylum is haunted and whatnot. But another motivation for me was that there's a lot of information out there and material out there of true stories, real stories, real events that are deeply intriguing and can tell us a lot about ourselves, that it was really worth getting into this in a much deeper way.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's every story, you know, I started, like I mentioned, with Viola. I started with her, but then I learned about all of these other people that you helped me find out about. And I felt compelled to tell their story. I still feel that way. And it's so easy to, especially with them buried under numbers, to forget who they might have been or what their story was. But I think the work, you know, the work you did and us putting it in a documentary helped shed some light. And now hopefully we're going to continue to do that through this podcast. So now that you know the background of the Athens Lunatic Asylum and the work done to research the stories of those buried there under numbered tombstones, starting with our next episode and continuing in each episode throughout the rest of the season, we're going to allow those who were voiceless in life and death to tell their own individual life story with the help of talented voice actors. Here's a preview of the first-person style accounts you're going to hear throughout the first season of Who Lies Beneath the Asylum.
Viola Rapp, grave 607, cemetery 2, buried 1934.
My name is Adam Kern. I'm grave number 251 in cemetery 1. I was buried on November 29th, 1895.
Israel Johnson, grave 281, cemetery 1. I was a free black man living in Washington County when I signed up to fight with the Union during the Civil War.
Eli Stevens, grave number 280, cemetery 1, buried March 23rd, 1898.
My name is Robert Barlow, but you can't find my grave in any of the asylum cemeteries.
My name is Alice Mail. I am grave number 561 in cemetery 2. I was buried in September of 1929. I was admitted to the asylum in 1928 as patient number 6869.
We also want to hear your stories about long-lost relatives in your families who you believe may be buried under a numbered tombstone at cemeteries across the country. We'd love to share your story and see if the work done in Athens might lead you to some answers and maybe even a named grave marker. Email us at wholiesbeneath@woub.org. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. Who Lies Beneath the Asylum is a production of WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. Written by me, Sherry Russo. Adam Rich is our audio engineer. Artwork by Sean Anderson. And special thanks to Doug McCabe for contributing his knowledge and voice to this podcast. If you like the show, please rate and subscribe, or visit woub.org to learn more.